Welcome to the Composer Studio Podcast. On the Composer Studio, we listen to the music of living composers. We talk to them about their writing process, and we learn about the world of music that they live and work in. Today's guest on the Composer Studio is Mara Keene. Mara is a New York City-based composer. She's a music editor, a pianist, an orchestrator, producer, and piano teacher. You can hear her music featured in Netflix's Princess Power. In 2019, she earned her Bachelor's of Music from George Mason University in classical composition. In 2022, she earned a Master's of Music at SUNY Purchase in studio composition, where she was selected as a SUNY Thayer Fellowship winner. She is an active member of the Society of Composers and Lyricists, the Alliance for Women Film Composers, and Maestra. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Mara. It's such a pleasure to speak with you and have you as our guest.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited because I've had a lot of good things happen recently that I'd love to talk about, and I'm excited to get right into it.
Yeah, go for it. Let us know.
Yeah, so in the last month or so, I actually started a couple of internships. One of them is for New York WIFT, which stands for the New York Women in Film and Television, which is a really, really great group. And I actually found them simply by Googling entertainment industry internships, and it led me to this group. And so actually recently, I had my first in-person event with them on Monday, and we went to the, it's Lionsgate, but it's also called Great Point Studios up in Yonkers. And it was really cool to tour there and network with other women filmmakers. It was a lot of fun. And it was really cool to see, because I do the film scoring, right? So I'm on the music side of things. It was really cool to see like how things are before the post-production process. Because when I come in, everything is like, it's already, the movie's already done, the show's already done, and I'm just adding to it. But it was cool like to be, they showed you around the current show that they're filming there, which is, I believe it's season 2 for Raising Kanan on Stars. They showed you the set, and it was just so cool. And so I was really happy to have that experience, because you think that everything with Hollywood is so glamorous. And then like you see, especially given like what's going on with the writer's strike and everything, you see like the writer's room and you see a lot of the behind the scenes, and it is not as glamorous as you think. It is actually a lot of hard work and a lot of crazy stuff going on. And it was really, really cool to see that, since I'm always on the post-production side of things.
That's really cool. So you were not just dealing with people involved with music. You were dealing with writers, producers, actors, basically everyone involved in the production of the show.
So I wasn't there. This was after hours, after they had already finished up filming for the day, but we got to see the set. I guess we weren't there during it because this was part of like a tour that the New York Women in Film and Television put on as part of like a networking event. So I wasn't there during the actual taping of Raising Kanan, but I was there after. It was just so cool to see like an actual set. And they showed you too, like the wardrobe and everything that happens behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. What was different this time is that normally, when I go to networking events, I'm usually with a bunch of other like musicians or composers. This time it was like filmmakers, producers, directors, writers. There was also a really nice person I met who does costume design. And it really opened my eyes to how many people are involved in every single TV show or film or theatrical performance. There's so many people that like, you know, we're so used to just seeing like the actors, and when we think of a show, we just think of the actors, but there's like hundreds, if not thousands almost, of people behind the scenes taking care of so many things. So, know, I always just come in at the end. I never get to see like how the meat is made. I'm just there when the sandwich is already done.
Right. That's a great way to put it. And, you know, on this show up to this point, we've only done the music of concert composers. We've never had a film composer on. And this is really interesting because it's a totally different ballgame. If you don't mind, just take a minute or two to speak about the differences between concert music versus film music, some of the challenges, I guess, that you would face when you're trying to put a scene together. And then we can take a listen to some of the music as well.
Yeah, so the difference between creating something for a regular like chamber ensemble to play versus the context of being in like a TV episode or for a film is that, you know, when you're doing something for a scene, let's say, your job as the composer is you're not supposed to take away from what's happening. You're only adding to it. And I think too, like when we first start out, we think like, you know, everything is about us because, you know, that's all we care about. We're doing the music. That's our baby. So to say, that's all we care about. So we think like, or at least I thought when I first started, you know, this is the only thing that matters in this scene, because that's what you're focusing so hard on. But what I've learned now that I've had like a bit of experience doing this is the music really is like the best film scores. Yes, they can work on their own, but also they only add to it. Like it's not distracting. It should be like when you're writing for it, you should ask yourself, you know, does this help the scene or does this hurt the scene? Am I like conveying how the character is feeling? Can I see myself in the point of view of this character? You know, am I getting the message across that needs to be here? And so we're just adding to the story, right? When I write something for a chamber ensemble, which is one of the pieces that we will be hearing, it's a completely different mindset. And for me, it's actually a lot harder to do that. Because when you do something for a screen, the story is already there. You're just, you know, doing it. How do I make the music convey the story and the emotions? When you're just writing something without a screen or a story behind it, you have to create the entire thing. And it's kind of crazy to do that. Like the piece you guys are going to hear soon, it's for a woodwind quintet. And I struggled so long with writing this piece because I kept going back and forth on the story that was in my head as I was writing it. And I realized, I kept thinking, why is this so difficult? And I know how to write for woodwind instruments. And it's because there's no like story that's already there that I don't even have to think about. It's kind of mindless, really. And at this point, I'm like, oh my God, what do I do with the flute? Does that mean that's the main character? How do these two instruments work with each other? How do they work against each other? And it took me so long to create because of that. And I'd say like really the biggest thing is the message that you're trying to convey, how you go about it, what resources you have. Like, you know, I can create my own story and everything involved when I'm doing it just for a chamber ensemble. But when I'm doing it for a story that's already been told, it's not my story to tell. I'm just there to help bring it to life.
So we're going to go ahead and listen to your quintet now. It's called The Test of Man for 5 woodwind instruments. And then when we come back, we'll speak briefly about this piece a little bit more. And then we'll also switch gears and talk about some of your film music as well. That was The Test of Man by our guest today, Mara Keene. Mara, you know, you mentioned earlier about thinking of a main character, and to me, the oboe sounded like it was the main character there.
Yes, so when you listen to this piece, I hope that you can hear that the oboe is our main character. It's taking a journey. The reason why I titled it The Test of Man is because, you know, the whole thing is about a journey. It's about the idea of duality, combining the bad and the good, and how that makes you human. And we all go through dealing with the bad side of life and the good side of life. And so when you listen to it, you know, the oboe is just kind of trekking along, and then it kind of blends into the background like we do as people. You know, we stand out, then we have our moments that we kind of cave back in. And then it reappears again in this bright, super excited, happy, tumultuous. Oh my God. It reappears again in this exciting way. And so the reason why it would kind of go from this nice, like calm into this craziness that you heard is because I went back and forth with what I wanted to do for this for so long. The piece is dedicated to a friend of mine who passed away in 2019 by suicide. I've said this before, and a lot of people have said this before me, but, you know, music mimics human emotion. It's the way that we can get things across that we can't put into words. And so I wanted to represent her life in a way that shows there was, you know, we all go through different moments of happiness and sadness, and we all share that same human experience, no matter what we're going through. And also, as I tried doing that, I realized that I kind of kept going back and forth a little bit too much. Like, I would have one measure be excited, and then I had the next measure be kind of sad. And musically, you can't really listen like that, because after a while, it kind of sounds like a bunch of jumbo. But I was watching, a lot of this is inspired by Band of Brothers, because I love a heroic tale. I love like war stories. I love hearing about people who...
You're talking about Band of Brothers from HBO.
Yes, right? Yes. It's an amazing soundtrack. If anybody hasn't seen Band of Brothers, I highly recommend. I've watched it before, and then recently I've been really obsessed with it. And I just love watching like heroic journeys. And then I kept kind of writing towards that, and I kept trying to fight it. And then I realized, why am I fighting this if that's my natural instinct? And then I also realized that, you know, part of being a human is the feeling of, you know, being heroic, having these heroic moments within ourselves, you know. And so what you just heard was about the first 3 minutes, roughly. It does go on, but you will have to check out my social media for that, because I'm lucky enough that I will be having my friend's ensemble perform this piece. I will have a date on that very soon. So the piece will be performed by my friend's ensemble, which is the Voyager Reed Quintet. And I will have a date for you guys very soon. I'm really looking forward to it. And then you can hear the rest of the piece then.
Yeah. Will it be performed in New York?
Yes, it will be performed in New York.
Nice. Yeah, definitely let us know when that happens, and I'll post it on our social media and our website as well. Let's switch gears and go from a concert piece that you've written and turn now to film scoring. Tell us a little bit about the instrumentation, or how you create the instrumentation for when you film scores, and maybe some of the cool aspects or the unique aspects of doing it the way you do it.
So when I write something for a film score or a TV show or whatever new project I'm starting, It depends on if there's a budget. If there's a lower budget, then I usually turn to my library, which has my VSTs, which stands for Virtual Studio Library. And so what that is, it's pretty much just electronic instruments that live on my computer. And this way I'm able to have such a wide variety of instruments so I can create these big orchestral pieces. And when I say this, keep in mind, I'd love to mention that I would love to have everything recorded through a studio with live recordings. I would love it. So that is the goal. But for now, because of budgetary issues, I use VSTs. And so it's a, like, another thing that depends too is this going to be performed by anybody? Is there a chance that this could be recorded? And that matters because if they're, like, for example, the TV show that I recently did, my episode should be airing later this year, for Princess Power on Netflix, I knew that it wasn't going to be recorded. And so with that, you can kind of bend the rules when it comes to how instruments function. So for example, I might have like a flute playing for several measures on end, no break in sight, because I know that there's not a real person that needs to breathe. So I can have it go as long as I want it to. And so when I'm doing something and there's no intention of a person actually recording it, I can kind of play around however I want to. And sometimes it's bad actually for me to take that approach, because whenever you're recording something and it is going to be performed by a live audience, you want to do it to a click track, which for any non-musicians out there is just the metronome beat. When you don't do things to a click track and then you look back at your piece, you kind of have like some crazy rhythms going on that are just not playable by a person. And also, as a composer, you want to try to avoid pissing off your performers. And so, which I have learned the hard way for sure. And so because of that, if I know for a fact nobody is me playing it, I don't use a click track. I just have fun with it and I relax a little bit more. If I know that there's even the slightest chance that somebody could perform this, it takes me a little bit, takes me a few more steps to do, because I do put a click track. I quantize everything. Quantize is like you kind of take everything you have and you make sure that it's lined up to the beat. And it's super important as a film composer and really any type of electronic composing, because you want it to be to the beat. And it's really easy as it is to get off beat when you're practicing, it's that easy to get off beat when you're composing for something.
You know what I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and listen to some of the short cues that you sent me. And, you know, we can go one by one. In some cases, they're 30 seconds, maybe a minute long. You know, you hear them and you immediately have a visual of what must be happening and what this music is accompanying. There's one that I love.
Oh, I'm excited.
The sneaky character. So, you know, this is about a sneaky character. This is what this is accompanying. Let's take a listen to this. There's such an art to film composing, almost exactly what you said earlier. I'll put it in different words, but it's like sometimes you need to get out of the way of the action that's happening. You know, and you ended with that sustained long tone there at the end to let whatever was happening be the most important thing on the screen.
Yeah, having everything play out, right? So, you know, with this, this was taken from a larger example. And so I think in this scene, I don't remember what this was for, but it is a sneaky scene. And, you know, we're kind of leading into the next scene where we're not sure what the character is going to do. And so we're leading something to the imagination, right? And so without giving away too much, I just wanted to play it to where, you know, you're intrigued, but you don't know what's happening. And even though I know, you know, the listeners, you know, we're not currently watching the clip together, you can kind of paint a picture in your mind of what the character might be doing. So it's a little bit of research first. And by research, I mean just having a lot of fun going on YouTube and searching up like Tom and Jerry on different things And Tom and Jerry is a great resource if you ever find yourself composing for a cartoon and you just have a blank head and you need inspiration. Tom and Jerry is my go-to. And so a big thing in comedy is whenever we want like something a little sneaky or something a little bit funny, you know, it kind of toes the line with both. A lot of people like to use woodwinds because they're kind of childlike in nature. You know, if I wanted to turn the sneaky moment really comedic, I would use brass instead. But in this, I used woodwinds because it's a little funny. So we want it to be light, which is what woodwinds give you. And, you know, it's kind of like the feeling of tiptoeing. And I couldn't do that with like a brass instrument just because of the nature. Like, you can't tiptoe with a tuba. It is so loud. It is so powerful. And you can't do that. So, you know, when you take woodwinds, like I think it might be flute and clarinet. You know, clarinet is such a fun instrument because it's so versatile and it's really agile. And so you can get these really fun, you know, crazy things going on with it because of the nature of the instrument.
Let's take a listen to another cue here. Speaking of cartoons, this is called Cartoon Call to Action. What makes this one a little different now, you have a drum beat in there, right? And so in a lot of film scores now these days, you're going to hear drum set or percussion of some sort creating a beat. That's something different, I think, maybe in the last 30 years or so with film composing, where you've heard more of that. And first of all, I want to ask you, do you play the drums and how was it programming drums?
Oh, so let me say first, I am super flattered that you think I'm capable of playing the drums, because drums are my hardest, percussion in general is my hardest thing to create. So I am super flattered that you would even ask, because that means something must be going right. This is another reason why I stress the importance of, you know, sticking to the beat and the quantizing that I talked about earlier. I'm a piano player through and through. It's really my main instrument, always has been. And so I always struggle with percussion because piano I played alone so much until I didn't. And then I realized, oh, because I was playing alone, I did not care about staying on the beat. And that was such a mistake. And so with percussion, you know, the percussion is like the backbone of everything. It's keeping the beat. It's super important to what is going on and driving the scene forward. And so when I am creating a drum track, I'm not going to lie, for me personally, it's kind of hard because I'm still getting used to it. I'm still getting used to the layout of a drum set, what everything means, how it works together, how it's different in different genres. And so it's still kind of a work in progress. But with this, I think this was a simple, it was like kick, snare, and some cymbals in there. So it wasn't anything too crazy. I think it was like kick on one and snare on three, which is a pretty standard drum beat. So, and this, it was nothing too crazy. And also in the track, if you noticed, it got a little bit quiet and it dipped down in the middle and then it came back up again. I believe that was because in the scene that I took it from, there was some dialogue when it got a little bit quieter. And I chose to use that for all of us to listen to, because it shows you that, you know, when you're creating something for a scene, it's not all about you. So you got to make sure that you are helping the scene, but you're also not taking away from it. And so if I wanted to make this really exciting, I would have added more in there. I might have made the beat like a, you know, just more going on. But I kept it very simple for the fact that it's just kind of supposed to drive the scene, not take anything away from it, not stand out. And so we hear like these fun dips in it because the characters are coming in and out of dialogue.
Well, speaking of exciting scenes, let's listen to this next short cue called Chase Scene. ¶¶ So that was the chase scene. Changing of scenes, changing of angles, things are happening really fast visually, and I'm guessing you're trying to keep up with it sonically with the music.
Oh, for sure. And with this one, you pointed out how it is moving faster. There's a lot more going on. And I can tell you, because it was set to a specific scene, there really wasn't much dialogue, which gave room for adding in all these things. And what was asked of me was, do Caribbean meets like fun, like little kid, like happy everything. That's kind of how it was explained to me. And so, you know, with this, we have like a Caribbean beat going, which took me a lot of time to research, actually. And we have a lot more instruments going on because it's supposed to be fun, right? It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be chaotic. And you know, we have the characters are kind of like, they're going after one another. They don't know what's happening. And so we have to have some chaos in this, which is represented by like the different rhythms going against each other. And at the end of the scene, you know, it's kind of spooky. It's a little bit eerie. But because this was meant for a children's show, we can't have it too scary because we're not trying to scare and give a bunch of 5-year-olds a bunch of nightmares.
So tell us about any future projects or projects that you have coming up. Like you mentioned earlier, an episode that's going to be releasing on Netflix, for instance.
I am at the edge of my seat waiting the date of when it's going to air, but it will be airing this year. I have a few shorts. Shorts are about like a minute to a minute and a half of cartoons, and I have them airing on Netflix. It will be for the show Princess Power. It was so fun writing for it, and it was my first real official, this is going to be on TV type of crazy moment, which when I first found out that I got it, I cried a ton, and that wasn't what you asked, but I felt like that was important to share anyway. Because it was super exciting. And yeah, so I do have that coming out. I also currently am interning for the New York Women in Film and Television. And one more that I forgot to mention is that I'm also interning for the Composers Institute for Diversity. And so what that is I've been thinking about ways to contribute to the lack of diversity in the composer world. And so there's a lot of historically underrepresented composers. They have a database, which I highly recommend. They have a really great database. And I have been adding specifically women Salvadorian composers and women Romanian composers.
What's the database? Is it a website?
Yes, I can send you a link so that can be provided somewhere for the listeners to check out because it's a really great resource. I think if you Google Composers Institute for Diversity database, it should come up. It's really great because, you know, throughout history, we're missing a lot of art, a lot of art songs because of just, you know, what was going on in the world. And yeah, you know how like Clara was like amazing, but because she was a woman at the time, they were like, yeah, we don't care. So the idea is to, you know, bring all of these works to life and have them be explored by people. And I know also I was talking with someone recently, they were saying how they're Romanian and they would love to perform more Romanian music, but they don't know how to find it. They don't know where to find it. And so the database is really great for that. And really just, you know, it's 2023. It would be really nice just, you know, like to have all these different types of pieces to learn. And I say that with a grain of salt, meaning that I don't want to take away from the importance of learning from the greats because there's a reason why music is the way that it is today. And I do believe that you have to know where music has been to know where it's going. And at the same time, because, you know, two things can happen simultaneously, that can be true. And it could be really nice to explore all of these works by these amazing, historically underrepresented composers. So they're doing a lot of really great work with this database, and I'm really happy to contribute to it.
That's really, really cool. And I'm glad you mentioned all this because it gives a lot of our listeners places to go and music and composers to check out. We're going to go in just a minute, but not too long ago, you were involved in a contest that I find absolutely fascinating, and what you produced for it is brilliant. We're going to close with that. But the contest was called Score the World Contest. And before we listen to the piece and close out with it, can you give us a bit of a background to your experience and to what it is? And, you know, in case someone else, maybe someone listening, wants to be able to take part in it in the future as well.
Yes. So I highly recommend Score the World. It's a really great organization. I believe they're fairly new. They just started doing contests, I think, like 4 years ago. I think this most recent contest was just the fourth one. And I also believe that it's very cheap to enter. I think it's like $20. And part of your entry fee goes towards a charity. And so it's a really great organization. And what they do is they give you, with your $20 or so, it might change, the price might change, but it's around there. What they do is they give you a brief, which is pretty much like a few pages telling you, you know, this is what the judges are looking for. Make sure you take care of these few points. And it gives you some information on pretty much what you're doing, what you're entering, how the film is, who created the film, a little bit of background on it. They also give you the film clip and you put in your original music. I think if you place within the top 100, they give you feedback and they tell you your ranking. And so this, it's really great to enter, especially year to year, because you can see how you've grown. And I know with myself, I first started entering, I think, my first year in grad school. So I've done it 3 times now. And so the first time I didn't place at all. I wasn't in the top 100, didn't place at all. But the second time I did place, I was in the top 100 at like 90 something. And then the most recent time I placed in the top 50 at, I believe, 42. And so it's nice because, you know, because everything's so subjective. How do we know if something's good? And I say good with quotes. The way I measure it is through progress. And that's why I highly recommend these contests, because it's just nice to see. And it's also something to add to your portfolio. So it's a really, really great organization. I really like Score the World, and I highly recommend them.
Well, before we listen to the piece, I wanted to thank you so much for being on the show and to share music with you and to talk about music together. And now I get to watch your career develop, and it's just incredible.
Yeah, thank you so much for letting me talk about so much. It's so very fun. I really appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Listen, it's my privilege to really to be able to speak with you and to share your music, because it's great. It's really wonderful. And you're on to something really great. And I think everyone should continue to keep their eyes and ears out as your career develops. So we are going to close now with her submission. And this is the submission where you won 42nd place, correct?
Yes. Out of 50. I say out of 50. I just meant top 50. I don't know how many entered, actually.
Sure. Okay. But it's really great. I've watched it several times. So this is from your second submission into the Score the World contest, the one where you placed in the top 100. And this is a scene from a movie called Son of Saul. I'm going to play the music for those who are listening, and it's going to include the original sound and audio/dialogue of the movie as well. And again, Mara, thank you so much for being on the show. It was awesome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. And thank you so much for everyone listening.
A little background to the movie Son of Saul before we listen. It is a World War II period film that depicts life in a concentration camp. In this sample that we're going to listen to, there are some trigger warnings for those who may be sensitive to gunfire. No one is shot in the footage, but there are gunshots in the distance, and they are rather abrupt. You will hear them starting around the 2-minute mark of this excerpt. For anyone who wants to see the footage along with Mara's score, I'm going to leave the link in the description of the episode. So please check it out. It's really, really wonderful and extremely moving.
in a minute. Wir müssen gehen weiter. 2 Kilometer. Lass ihn. Powinniśmy spotkać kogoś z Armii Krajowej. Dadzą nam broń. Idziemy walczyć, co widzi. Są już pod Krakowem. Jeśli nie, pójdziemy na Pszczynę.
You have been listening to the music of Mara Keen on the Composer Studio. To learn more about Mara and her music, please visit her website at marakeenmusic.com. That's M-A-R-A-K-E-E-N music.com. I would like to close with a fitting quote by composer John Williams. Writing a tune is like sculpting. In that rock, there is a statue. We just have to go and find it.